Welcome to the Catholic Cafe, where Catholic truth is served fresh daily. We've made you a reservation in the luxurious corner booth, so come on in and see what's on the menu today. Now, here's your host, Deacon Jeff Drzemski.
Greetings and welcome to the Catholic Cafe. I'm Deacon Jeff, sitting in the luxurious corner booth of the Catholic Cafe. And I have Ziggy Rodriguez here.
That's me.
And I have Venerable Tom Dorian.
Hello.
Waiting on that miracle. And so I'm. You know what, you guys? I was just traveling, and I got back. I was in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I was celebrating. Since we're in the midst of our series on our summer of holy matrimony, and we're doing shows on holy matrimony, on the beauty and the gift of marriage. Its meaning, not just its Catholic meaning, but its universal meaning in the world as revealed by God. And I had the honor and the pleasure of assisting at Mass at my in-laws, Mimi and Vic Truey. Congratulations on attaining their 70th wedding anniversary.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that is like...
70.
You think like, well, that's kind of rare, isn't it? It's actually 0.1% of marriages make it there.
Oh, wow.
Simply because of, like, longevity. I mean, yeah. It's 70 years.
When they get married and we were 10?
They were 17. So these were different times.
I'm glad they were able to stay truey to one another for
truey,
so long.
They stayed truey to each other. No one used that joke. That
really?
Man.
Well, it's sad because the falsies, they got divorced really okay. quickly.
They did not last. Well... I do think that, like, if you're thinking like, man, if I could ever make to 70, I mean, that's like twice what Bess and I have been married.
Yeah,
we were 36 going on 37, and you were 38, is that right?
Going on 39,
because we got 75 years of marriage experience between us. And I'm thinking like, well, how are we ever gonna do that? Now, we started later. Mm-hmm. So we started, Bess and I started, you know, 10 years after they did, but you know, they have been true to each other for 70 years. That's which great. Is just an incredible accomplishment. And so for all those folks out there that are doubters that this is even possible, that's why I think that these shows that we're doing right now are really so important. Mm-hmm. Because the stuff that we're talking about is how you do that. Mm-hmm. Right? And so if we can delve into these, what the church teaches about marriage, then, you know, if you understand that going into marriage, then your chances, we'll just say of success, but your chances of not getting divorced, mm-hmm. right? And we'll talk about divorce statistics later on. They're very ominous and scary, but the reality is we need to talk about that stuff. But your chances of not experiencing that sorrow and your brokenness in your life are way higher when you understand what the church teaches.
Well, I think we live in a culture that has these like romanticized views of very sentimentalized views of love and marriage, where there's more focus on like the wedding than on the marriage,
yeah.
right? And on the romance and
what are you going
like,
to wear?
Right.
What are the bridesmaids going to wear? What's the cake going to be like?
Right. Exactly. As opposed to like a sacramental preparation, and like when you give the example that you're giving. You know, a lot of us don't want to think in terms of old age because it can be sort of if that's still distant for you, you can you know we tend to want to kind of slough that off and be like, oh, I don't want to think about that right
yeah.
now. But you know, we have to think about the fact that you know what marriage ultimately is. This is the person that you are going to be trusting to be with you through all of that, and they're entrusting you with the same to be with them through sickness and health,
yeah.
to be, you know, where one of you is going to be present at the deathbed, to where you're building one another up to the extent that you're blessed with able to do so, with children to be with you during that process. You know, for the listeners that we might have who are young and still have their parents, it might not have set in.
There are
in.
Seven of them, by the way.
Right.
Seven young people listening to us right now.
Hey, kids. But those seven people, they might not realize, you know, that it might not have set in, because it's not a fun thought that, you know, 40, 50 years from now, their parents aren't going to be around. You know what yeah. I mean? And maybe their siblings will, maybe they won't. This is the time in life, generally speaking, if you have a vocation to marriage, to start building for the future that you'll have all those decades in the future.
Yeah.
And so we sometimes we need to set aside the sentimentality that's there and really be grounded in God is there's a sacramental union that God desires to prepare me for. He wills to prepare me for if me and my future spouse, you know, both receive one another in Him and really put ourselves at His disposal to be brought together in that way. God is the one who can make that miracle happen, because at the end of the day, it is a miracle.
Yeah,
for couples to stay around that long. It is not something that, you know,
Jesus's first miracle was done at a wedding.
Right.
Right. So there's a connection to that, and the miraculous does happen. Now, Will, I do want to not correct you, because you were correct in what you just said,
sure,
Ziggy, but I will say that we're not against sentiment and romance.
Sure.
But I think that what you might agree with me on is if we're understanding the sacramentality of marriage, it is arguably going to be the most romantic and most sentimental wedding and experience, and not just wedding, but marriage. You're going to essentially live in romance. You're going to live in that beautiful gift or state, right? And that's what the grace does that comes from that sacrament and allows all that. I will say also, you did say, I will disagree about one thing. And you were saying, like, well, I didn't mean to hold your hand. I actually held Sam's hand right there. That was really an awkward guy thing, wasn't it? I just touched his hand. That was really weird. So it's like, I was talking about romance, and all of a sudden we're like having a bromance here at the Catholic Cafe.
I didn't know what to do.
No, but you were saying, you recoiled in fear is what you did. It's a good thing we're on radio. But you were talking about the fact that, like, the world has kind of romanticized marriage. Well, I would not disagree, because those that are getting married, there might be a romantic view of it only. Sure. But we have fewer people getting married.
I agree with that.
There's a lot of people who have really just kind of eschewed marriage and said, what do you need a piece of paper to say that you love someone else?
Or I guess what I would say is they've taken the sentimentality that
made it the priority.
The feelings. Yeah, exactly. They flipped the priorities on their head, and they're focused on chasing feelings and chasing that experience and that fuzziness and the physical aspects, as opposed to being grounded first in the reality of what it is. And you're right. Like, once you're grounded in what it is, and once you're grounded in God, and God is rooted you in the truth of marriage and with the marriage preparation process and all of that stuff, and then living out your marriage once you're married, yeah, of course, it's like romantic in the most authentic possible
pure
way.
And authentic, exactly. So that's what we want for everyone. I will say, you mentioned also in talking about, you were sort of hinting at this sort of giving of oneself to the other, right? This self gift, and that's one of the places where I think I want to focus as we're talking about the theology. We're continuing talking about the theology of marriage and where it comes from, how it's been revealed to us. And we've already talked about Trinitarian love. We've talked about why the church cares so much about this in terms of this being a sacrament. We've talked about the fact that the one flesh key to marriage, and understanding that essentially as one flesh you become a new entity, like the two shall be joined together. And all these things are not things that happen in isolation. They're all connected, and they're all connected to the theology and the meaning of marriage. And one of the best places to find this is a gift to us from St. Paul in his letter to the Ephesians. I remember doing marriage prep one time. This is many years ago, maybe 15 years ago or so. And I was doing a marriage prep session, and it was one of the earlier ones. And the bride was there, the bride-to-be and the groom, of course. But the mother of the bride had dropped them off, and we had started to chat, and we were talking about selecting the readings for the Mass. And the mother, she injected herself into this moment because she felt very strongly and passionately about something. And she said, you know, I don't know that I don't really have anything to say about the readings, except you will not be using that reading. My daughter will not be listening to that one reading where she has to submit to her husband. that old-fashioned way of thinking, that's not what's going to happen at our marriage. And I'm like going, okay, first of all, you're not getting married. No, I didn't say any of that. It's like, yes, oh, yes, ma'am. Thank you very much for your input. All right, well, it's time for you to go, and let me talk to little Janie and Johnny here, and let's continue with our marriage prep. And as we went on with through the marriage prep, ultimately, at the end of the day, by the way, Ephesians 5 was read at their wedding.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but not in spite of mom. There was a little there was conversations that were had. But the point is, Ephesians 5 is not what people think it is. And that and so we're going to read through that because it figures prominently into what we're talking about.
It's not the get me a sandwich passage?
No, it is not, yeah. Although some people might think it is.
Right.
Right, especially the guys. Guys can think like, oh, yeah, all right, I have a servant.
Right.
Right? And so if we look at that, so we'll just kind of launch in by reading what St. Paul says in, it's starting at, where is that, verse 21? Mm-hmm. Is that right, verse 21?
Yep.
Yeah, verse 21 is where we start. But the wedding reading starts all the way back at verse 2. So it's like it's early, like in 2, where it says, brothers and sisters, live in love as Christ loved us and handed himself over for us, right? That's verse 2 from Ephesians 5. And then it skips some section there, and then it hits the part that, like, mom didn't
makes
like.
The moms cringe.
Yeah, because they don't know, right? And so there, then
well,
it starts.
Stop reading.
That's right, that's right. Be subordinate to one another out of reverence for Christ. And then St. Paul immediately goes in and starts lambasting the wives, right, in a very hateful and misogynistic way. Now, I say that in, please, don't write letters
right.
or emails, because I'm not saying that. In fact, I think people perceive that, but that's not what's happening. So what St. Paul says, he says, wives should be subordinate to their husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is head of his wife, just as Christ is head of the church, he himself the Savior of the body. As the church is subordinate to Christ, so wives should be subordinate to their husbands in everything. Hmm. Now, if you were to read that and you stop there, there's usually a little slight grin on the groom's face. Because in his mind, it's like it's very easy to start to picture, as you said, get thee me a sandwich.
Yeah, there's guys out there who'd like that to be the only line in the Bible.
Exactly right. You know, it's like, yeah, so you basically, if I need a sandwich and a beverage, I've got someone, she is going to be subordinate to me.
Right.
Other translations say submit.
Yeah.
Submit yourself to your husband. And really, he just hits it home when he says, because the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church. And it's like, okay, so he's the boss, mm-hmm. right? And people hear that. And that's a scary thought for some people, especially if you're looking at it culturally from a worldly perspective and what we think nowadays.
Well, especially if it's placed in the hands of like a guy who's kind of a jerk and who's going to take this passage and misuse it within the context of the marriage, which has obviously happened, you know, where guys are living this passage but they're not, and
yes.
they think they are, and they're using it and making excuses to
like,
mistreat their wives.
I'm gonna play the Ephesians 5 card,
right,
and I'm gonna say you are not doing this,
right,
as your husband I'm commanding you, and that's not what's going on here,
right,
right. And there is a sense of the head of the church, the head of the family. There is a sense of subordination and submission that is going on here. And St. Paul is not wrong in what he says. And you're thinking, for the ladies who are listening right now, well, of course, you're going to say that, right? But I want to spend a little time talking about this. So, first of all, a lot of people forget the fact that where St. Paul starts is by saying, be subordinate to one another out of reverence of Christ. And he is saying that the wife should be subordinate to the husband, but the husband also at the same time has to be subordinate to the wife. Mm-hmm. Right? He's saying that. Now, he does go quickly into this wives being subordinate to the husbands, mm-hmm. right? And that he is the head of the family as Christ is the head of the church, right? And he does that right from the beginning, but remember, there is both. Now, then, afterwards, there's, well, let me go back to the subordinate thing, and let me just say that, you know, in that other translation where you submit, they come from the same Latin root, or the same word etymology, but it's like wives should submit to their husbands, and that is the same root as the word submission, right? And you think there is a there is an order of hierarchy or an appearance of hierarchy there, of but you can also look at it from the perspective of being under submission. Under the mission, right? And if the mission is the same for both, then you're both under the same mission. Mm-hmm. And what is the mission? The mission is get to heaven, right? You're in your marriage, the wife and the husband are they're submitting to each other. They're under the same mission. In other words, it's a uniting thing, not a superiority thing, mm-hmm. right? Now, there still is this thing about the head of the church. And see, once St. Paul talks to the wives, he turns to the husbands. And where the wives have to be subordinate and submit to the husband, who is the head of the family, it seems like at first blush that he is like going easy on the husbands. Because he says here, husbands, love your wives. Not like submitting to them. He says, husbands, love your wives. And you think, well, that's not fair. Right, he should be saying to them the same thing and subordinate in the same way. But here's the thing: he's actually maybe holding the husbands to an even higher, more difficult standard, right? Because we need to read the whole thing, right? Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ loved the church and handed himself over for her to sanctify her, cleansing her by the bath of water and the word. Water with the word, that he might present to himself the church in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. So also husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one hates his own flesh, but rather nourishes and cherishes it, even as Christ does the church, because we are members of his body. Now again, we're starting to see Paul referencing that idea of the one flesh here, right? You're loving your own flesh to be in one flesh. But I want to go back to this idea that the husbands have to love your wives. When you complete that sentence, how do you have to love your wife as Christ loved the church? What did sacrifice. Christ do? That's right. He died for the church. Husbands, while your wife must submit to you or be subordinate to you and allow you to be the head, you have to be willing to die for your wife. Mm-hmm. Like to give up everything. So everything that you want, your sandwich and beverage that you thought you wanted, you give that up for her. You don't need her to like walk, you know, and like 10 feet behind you and be at your beck and call. That's not what's happening here. That when you love her in a sacrificial way, that you totally pour yourself out for her in a libation, that you give yourself like to her. That's where the word spouse comes from, by the way, from spendane, or I may be saying that wrong in Greek, but it essentially means to pour yourself out as a libation, right? To be a spouse is to pour yourself out for the other, right? To essentially spill your blood for them. Mm-hmm. And so this total self-gift, this self-sacrifice is what husbands are actually called to. And that, to me, is one of the most powerful things. And essentially, what ends up happening is if he is willing to die for her, right, then he's not going to set himself up on this pedestal. You will honor me and you will give me whatever I ask you to do and you'll be obedient to me. Right?
He's going to die to self in not just big ways, but little ways in everyday life, right?
100%. Let's look at the word head of the church, because there's other scriptures that tell us about Jesus, because Paul says that Jesus is the head of the church and the husband is the head of the family. Well, let's go to the gospel according to Mark in chapter 10, verse 45, and we'll read this. For the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. So what it means to be the head of the church is to serve. So what it means to be the head of the family is to serve your family. So now who's serving? Who's bringing the drink? Who's bringing the sandwich? That's the husband, right? He is making sure his wife has everything she needs. She has so many things that she's got to do that she's responsible for. If she has a career outside of the home, if she has a career inside the home, if she's caring for the kids, if she's keeping the home, whatever she's doing, the husband is in service to her and not leaving her to do all of the work, right? Whatever needs to be done. And so this is what it means to be the head of the church, to be the head of the family. And so for the husband to be that head, and we've all heard that expression, how the husband's the head, but the Christ, but the wife is the neck, mm-hmm. and whichever way the neck turns is which way the head goes. There is a connection in all of this stuff that helps you understand. And when this happens, when we live as Christ did as men, and when women are subordinate to their husbands as Paul speaks here, what ends up happening? That like in this dying to self, the husband then sanctifies his wife, as Paul says, right? He makes her holy by dying to her, right? And he cleanses her. He protects her dignity and her chastity, right? And in doing that, he then will be without spot or wrinkle, right? He'll be chaste and holy, right? And you start to realize that that what he's doing, he's chaste and holy in her sight, in the church's sight. And now you start to realize this is what's happening in marriage. And it's a total self-gift of one to the other. And so few people understand this gift. So few people understand this. Now, I know we've talked about those who are being prepared for marriage. Sam mentioned like the young people who might be listening now and thinking about marriage and what they need to think about it. But also, I think I want to also talk to people who are married, who've been married for 1 year, for 2 years, for 5 years, for 10 years, who've been married for 38 years, Tom, people who've been married for 50 years. There is no time in which, there's no length of time in a marriage in which you just basically, well, we're there. We've made it. Everything is good. We always need to evaluate where we are in our marriage. We always need to look and examine, are we living this way? As a husband, am I being subordinate to my wife in the sense that Paul says, am I the head of the family in a way that is serving the family, right? Am I putting her on a pedestal? Am I making her holy so that I become chaste and holy as well? You know, and wives, am I subordinating myself to my husband? Am I offering him my very being, the core of who I am, right? And so we can all work on that. All of us struggle with that. We all have that sin of pride that we've had to deal with all of our life. We're living in a fallen world, and a world that teaches us all the wrong things about marriage. Valentine's Day has become this terrible holiday now, where you see these like these shows or the commercials about indulge yourself, right? And they always have some woman wearing some seductive nightgown thing, and then we're like, oh, indulge ourselves with chocolates and, you know, all these things, and we're turning it into this, you know, romanticized thing that's hyper-sexualized, I think, as well, when really we should be focusing on this total gift of self of one to the other. That's the greatest gift you can give to your spouse on Valentine's Day. So like, instead of giving a bouquet of flowers, now I'm not saying guys, you know, save your 30 or 50 bucks or whatever and don't buy flowers. What I am saying is, if you're going to give flowers, you also need to give yourself in service. How about you cook the dinner, you do everything. How about you do the dishes? How about you vacuum the house? How about you offer to do these things, and not just on Valentine's Day, but on a regular basis? You know, this is what ends up happening. And I'll go back to the example of my in-laws. You know, when I was growing up as a younger man, and my vision and view of what a man was supposed to be, you know, Victory was the epitome to me. When I saw him, he had his chair, he did everything. His wife dutifully cooked all the dinners and did all the laundry. He didn't do any of that. Right, he didn't do any of that. Now, he was still dad, and he had his chair, and he watched TV, and I'm like, yeah, I want to do that. And what's so beautiful to see is that in their 70th year of marriage, and he actually started this a little while ago, well, our bodies start to fail us. You know, Mimi's, she's still vibrant and a wonderful woman, but she's struggling health-wise, as we all do when we're in our late 80s. And he does the dishes. He'll be out there doing stuff in the kitchen. I'm like going like, that's the same Vic that was sitting in the chair. Mm-hmm. You know, he is living Ephesians 5 out. And I'm just telling you guys, if you want the secret to a long marriage, it's Ephesians 5.
I heard a Protestant friend say, you know, whenever I have something really difficult to talk to my wife about, something I'm asking of her and of the family that I know is going to be a tough sell, he's like, I have found it's a lot easier to have that conversation if while I'm, you know, washing the dishes and asking her to sit down, as opposed to yelling at it while I'm watching TV.
Yes, exactly.
From the couch.
Yeah, during the commercial breaks.
Yeah.
right? Because you don't want to interrupt whatever the show is you're watching. No, I am 100% with you. And these are the realities. And the sooner we realize them when we're young and unmarried, and also the sooner we realize them if we've been sort of forgotten some of this as we are along in our marriages, the better off our marriage is going to be. And it might be a little rocky in your marriage. I don't know. I hope not. But it might be. Underlying that rockiness might be some of the brokenness where our pride has taken over and we're not living as we should. So it's time for self-examine. Like, do I do this or do I not do this? The last few verses of the scripture from Ephesians 5 that's read at the wedding is, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak in reference to Christ and the church. In any case, each one of you should love his wife as himself, and the wife should respect her husband. When you see this now in the context of Trinitarian love, total self-gift, when you see this in the context of Christ's sacrifice for the church, your sacrifice as husbands, your sacrifice as wives, sacrificing for each other, giving fully to each other, this is the antidote to the world, the antidote to the brokenness, and it essentially is the secret, and I'm doing air quotes, okay? Mm-hmm. It's the secret that's not quite so secret if you understand the church's teaching, and a long and happy and healthy and beautiful marriage. And by the way, I love you, Bess, and I'm sure Tom wants to say...
Oh, yeah, I love you, Sandy.
Yeah, amen. All right. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Thanks for listening to The Catholic Cafe. If you'd like to contact Deacon Jeff, send him an email at deaconjeff@thecatholiccafe.com. Visit us on the web at thecatholiccafe.com. You can also find us on iTunes or follow us on Facebook and Twitter. The Catholic Cafe is brought to you by the Order of Malta Federal Association. Join us again at The Catholic Cafe, serving up salvation one cup of coffee at a time.